Welcome along to episode 4 of Midweek F1. This is your new F1 flavoured pick-me-up midweek. Yeah, I don't know what kind of flavour it will be, like a nice salted caramel. That's what I feel like. That feels about right. It's the last look at the race that's just gone and a first look at the race coming up. I'm Nicola Hume and as always, I am joined by the voice of reason on Drive to Survive, Ben Edwards.
Thank you very much. And we've got another packed show yet again this week because we're looking back to what happened in Japan and what it's doing for the fight in the World Championship. And it did plenty for that.
Yeah. And then we're going to be joined by this week's special guest. And I'm actually quite excited about this because it's basically like having Formula One commentators, but like Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi in one room. It's happening. Yeah.
Looking forward to that. We've also got the We Need to Talk About section that we always do in the podcast, talking about drivers that might be going through a tough time. I'm a bit shocked at who we're talking about this week. We'll get into that in a moment.
And then, of course, it's our very own Midweek F1 Prediction Championship of the World. Who got the numbers right? Who got their predictions right from the Japanese Grand Prix? Spoiler alert, I think I did pretty well.
Very good. Yeah. I like me. But we will get into what's going to be coming up next week in Bahrain. And of course, it could all happen differently again when we've definitely got a battle on in the Drivers' Championship. Lots to look forward to.
But first, we need to look back on Japan. And he's back. Max Verstappen is back. What a race for him. What a qualifying for him, first of all. It was amazing, right?
It was brilliant. I mean, Max was absolutely at his top level.
Yeah.
And it was just so fantastic. The time differences were so minute between him and the two McLarens. Mm-hmm. But he just got that pole position. And his quality at Suzuka has always been seen to be fantastic. And of course, he went on to take his fourth win there. It was utterly brilliant. And it was fun to see Red Bull using that different livery for that event to celebrate.
Nice.
Yeah, to celebrate the first ever Honda victory, which was back in 1965 at the Mexican Grand Prix. So that was fun. And the fact that they actually made it work with pole and with a win couldn't have gone better for them.
Yeah, I think it was probably the best qualifying from Max for probably the entire career of his. I think it was so impressive, knowing the fact that his car isn't the best. It's not the best one on the track at the moment. For him to be able to pull that out of the bag was just magnificent. And then obviously pulling the win out of the bag was even better. Blooming marvellous.
It was brilliant. I mean, he's 27 years old now, so he's still at an absolute peak in, you know, what he can do in life. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more from Max in that respect. But there's no doubt, as you say, that I think that the Red Bull car is actually still not quite as quick as the McLaren car. But what he can do with his talent is remarkable. And it certainly worked at Suzuka. Whether it'll work everywhere, that's a big question. But it was fantastically done.
I have to ask you, did you get up early for the race?
I did.
Do you think it was worth getting up for?
Actually, I know it was a bit of, for many people, it was a bit of a dull race. But actually, I was impressed by how close the two McLarens were to the back of Max. But I was also impressed the way he kept Lando out of his DRS zone. It was like 1.1, 1.2 seconds. You're just looking at the time difference between them. If it had got to under a second, it could have been easier for Lando to get the DRS zone and maybe try and make a pass. But the way Max controlled it, fantastic. So, and I do love the Suzuka track. I love watching it, you know, and they had some great overhead shots of it as well.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Yeah, and the challenges of driving that track. I did actually enjoy it, even though we didn't really see much overtaking.
No, like hardly any overtaking. Let's go over to producer Jim, who's normally got a nice list of things for us to discuss. Go for it.
Okay, yeah, amazing performance by Max and Red Bull. But was it actually McLaren dropping the ball strategy-wise is the reason why they won? Should they have let Oscar attack Max? Discuss.
I think they should have done. I absolutely think they should have done. Oscar was clearly saying that he was faster and that he could have actually fought Max. But then for some reason, like Lando then sped up for about two laps and then slowed back down again. And I think they should have given that opportunity to Oscar. Do you agree?
It's a really interesting question. And I think this is one of the major challenges for the season going ahead, in that they have two top drivers who are also could be battling for the Drivers' Championship. How you then regulate that is not easy. If you're the faster qualifier and you're ahead once you get going into the race, you kind of have priority over the guy behind you, even though he's a teammate. And for the team, yes, I mean, some people were also talking about the possibility of completely different strategy, and that might sometimes work. I'm not sure that they could have done a lot yesterday, because they, with Piastri, they did stop him to make sure that he wasn't under threat from behind. So, but there are times when they can perhaps play the strategy a bit more between the two drivers. But of course, if you get it wrong for one of your drivers, they're going to be very resentful. Mm-hmm. So for Red Bull, they've got a very clear pattern, which is just everything focuses on Max.
Yep.
For McLaren, they've got a slightly more difficult balance, but they've got the fastest car. So how's that all going to work?
No idea. No idea. Only the races to come will help us finding out. Jim.
Okay. We need to talk about the pit lane scuffle. A slow stop from Red Bull, but McLaren's pit position as Constructors' Champions allows Lando to go for the move, right? Discuss.
Well, actually, I mean, the move was just to try and get alongside, but he was not going to make it. I mean, he just wasn't far enough alongside for when we were watching it. And Max had every right, really, to just hold his position. He certainly didn't want to cross the solid white line on the outside. And yeah, typical Max. He wasn't going to make it easy. You know, he kind of brought it in a little bit.
Lando, did he?
Just a tiny bit, but it was Lando's choice. And I think Lando made a mistake. I think he should have backed off a little bit and been right up his tail going onto the track. I think that was an error.
I think it was quite nice that there was a drama and Max was actually in the right, and everyone was going, yeah, no, Max was right on that one. Because normally everyone is so quick to attack Max whenever there is some sort of drama. And it was quite nice to see every person go, yeah, no, Max was right there. Max was absolutely right.
Absolutely. He did nothing wrong. He did it absolutely right. There was some interesting radio, of course, coming through.
Yes.
And, you know, and you do hear the drivers sometimes just complaining to try and see if they can get something with the team, going back to the authorities and seeing if they can get something out of it. But fair enough. I think Lando probably knew straight away that that really wasn't going to work.
Yeah. He made a whoopsie.
He did.
And cut the grass while he was at it. Jim.
Yes, Max won. But is this just papering over the cracks of the second driver swap debacle? Yuki and Lawson both out of the points. No one's won out of this, right? Discuss.
Okay. So I think during practice, Yuki seemed pretty quick. He seemed very close to Max and seemed pretty confident and happy with the car. Qualifying, he was great in Q1. Did some good times, really close to Max again in Q1. Q2 was where it all just went a little bit, a little bit tits up for Yuki, because it just felt like he only really got time to get one decent lap out and it just wasn't quite enough. And then the race, he just couldn't quite find his feet. But I genuinely think that in a few races' time, maybe two more races, I think Yuki will find his feet and I think he'll be close to Max.
It's an interesting point. I think I tend to agree. I think he was a little unlucky. I think he just got it a bit wrong in qualifying. First part of qualifying, as you say, was quite reasonable. And we all know, I was looking back actually a bit over the history, for all Max's teammates, trying to be close to Max is a real challenge. Mm-hmm. Yes, there was a time when Sergio Perez was going a bit stronger than he had done in recent times, but they had a very strong car then and a car that he enjoyed, but he was still nearly half a second off. I was looking back at the Alex Albon years where, as the youngster, when he came in, he was nearly always half a second off or more. So I think the main challenge for Yuki, and one of the problems now, of course, is that the grid is so close. So if you lose a few tenths now to your teammate, you don't just lose two or three places, you can go a long way back. And that is something you really have to be very wary of this year, because the teams are all so close in this final year of strategy of the cars with their technical side. So I think that it can be fascinating. But I do agree with you that Tsunoda will get better.
Yeah.
I honestly do think that he will get closer.
Yeah.
I think he's a talent. And I think I was quite impressed with the way he was talking to the team and really trying to work with them. That was good.
Yeah. Jim.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Alex Albon has turned into Mr. Grumpy. Still finished in the points. What's going on there? Discuss.
Yeah, I noticed that. His radio messages were a little bit like
I don't know, quite harsh.
He just got up on the wrong side of the bed or something.
He did, didn't he? Yeah, no, he can be a bit harsh at times. And I was a bit surprised that Alex was like that, because actually Williams are doing a pretty good job compared to where they have been. And yes, you know, he can be very impressive at times when the car's right for him. But yes, I was a little surprised that he was so upset, because they didn't lose out big time. And in the end, that top 10 group stayed pretty much where they were.
I wonder what the problem was. Maybe there was something going on behind the scenes that we just won't know anything about. And maybe there was like a little mini argument before he went out on the track and that's it. Then he was just holding on to his anger for a while. Hormones, probably hormones.
May well be. Yeah, hard to say. Yeah.
Jim.
Quick rookie watch updates. Honourable mention to Hadjar, Behrmann and Antonelli, 18-year-old, leads Grand Prix and collects fastest lap too. Discuss. Yeah.
Kimi.
I was very impressed with that, I have to say. Really, really good. When he got that lead, I mean, yes, they were on a later stop, so he was on a different strategy to the others. But yeah, when he got into clear air, he was really confident with the car. He was doing some very good lap times. And the way he caught George Russell towards the end, yes, his tyres were fresher at that point, and George's tyres, you know, had lost some of their grip by then. But it was very impressive. And I think Kimi Antonelli is really taking those steps now that we it's good to see from the rookies.
Yeah.
But as you say, he wasn't the only rookie that did a good job, was he?
Ollie Behrmann.
Yeah.
But also, all of his radio messages just sound like he's living his best life and he's loving every second of being on track.
Yeah, and he's got such a big smile on his face. When he did such a good job in qualifying as well, it was lovely to see the interviews with him afterwards, getting into the top 10. Very impressive. And it's good to have that confidence build, especially when he had a horrible beginning, very beginning in Australia this year. But now he's doing a good job.
And Isaac Hadjar, I think since the whole, when he crashed out in the formation lap and then Papa Hamilton coming in and hugging him, I feel like there's just a universal love for Isaac now. And everyone's just rooting for him. And he's just kind of quietly doing his thing, scoring some points. I feel really over the moon for him that he scored some points in this race. And I think he's just going to be a little dark horse, I think.
It'll be very interesting to see how he gets on. Yeah, no, I agree. He did a very good job in Suzuka, which is the challenge, one of the most challenging circuits in a way. He did it well. And now if that confidence can build up, let's see where he can go.
Yeah. Jim.
Like last one, and as always, three races in. Was this just a Red Bull track? Or do we now genuinely have a three-way fight for the Drivers' World Championship?
It's a good question, isn't it? I mean, Max and Red Bull, they did a fantastic job here. But I do think we have a three-way fight for the Drivers' Championship. It really feels like that to me, because Max has that incredible talent and Red Bull have such a push. Great. He was very impressed with how the team, engineering-wise, had managed to turn the car around a bit to make it suit him, and he was quick. And I think they have a tremendous relationship. But we know the McLaren is so strong, and we both know that both Lando and Oscar are driving superbly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do feel that this could easily become a three-way, but only three at the moment, because everyone else seems to drop back. George Russell, you know, initially he had those two podiums. Is the Mercedes going to be strong enough? Maybe later in the year. They may have the development later in the year, but you need those points regularly.
I wonder if George has just done a good job so far of just kind of swooping in when there's been some mistakes, rather than just being in a fantastic car, being a fantastic driver.
I think he's done a great job, actually. Yeah. I just think he was a little bit less fortunate. Qualifying just didn't work for them this time, whereas qualifying in Australia and China, he did fantastically well. And I think he's actually at a very top level at the moment, but it just did not work in Suzuka. But we need to keep an eye on him, because I do think if Mercedes can just tweak that car a little bit more, he could suddenly be back up there.
And it's interesting that we're not even mentioning Ferrari.
No, I know. And Ferrari, actually, when we will be talking about Bahrain coming up, and Bahrain has been a track that has suited Ferrari. So whether that's going to work better for them this time, Suzuka didn't quite work for them in terms of getting the car to work well. But Bahrain it has been a good track for Ferrari over the years. They've had 7 wins over the years. Whether they can make that come good, I don't know.
I don't know. We have to talk about the latest thing going on social media, and that has to be Valtteri Bottas and his random side quests. So there's a video on Instagram that Mercedes posted, right? Bottas is amazing on social media, and some of the stuff that he posts are just hilarious, and it makes you fall in love with him. He went on a roller coaster with one of those sort of head camera things. It makes his chin look like it comes out about an extra foot, and he just went on this roller coaster, and you're like, why? Like, what's this achieving? Like, what is this even advertising? It's just advertising Bottas and Mercedes and the fact that he's brilliant.
No, he's got so good at that, hasn't he?
Yeah.
On cameras now, he's fun to watch, and he's changed so much from those early years when he was Lewis Hamilton's teammate and keeping very contained. Yeah. Now he's so out there. It's great to see.
Now they're just like, yeah, chuck him on a roller coaster, be funny.
It's good stuff.
He's a good boy. Shall we introduce our guest?
Yes, let's do that. We've got a very special guest this week who is the Radio 5 Live and Sky F1 commentator these days, Harry Benjamin. Harry, it's lovely to have you with us.
Hi, thank you. I feel like you can't call me a commentator when you're sat there, Ben.
You are.
I feel too imposter-like.
Not at all, mate. You're doing a great job. It's really good.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's cool to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good. And what did you think of, we were talking about the amazing win that Max Verstappen took with Red Bull. What were your thoughts on that?
Look, it's not going to be a race that goes down in the history books as one of the all-time greats, is it? But it was just another display of what a generational talent Max Verstappen is. I mean, that car should not be winning. That car, in anybody else's hands, cannot even score points right now. So the fact he is able to disrupt the two McLarens, who on paper should have had that win in the bag between one of them. So the fact he's able to get up there with a pole position lap that was one of his very best in his entire career, to then hold on to the lead. I know overtaking was a minimal task anyway, but to be able to work together with the strategy of the team, he is single-handedly keeping them in the fight. And without them, without Max, Red Bull would be in big trouble. So from that perspective, it was a really interesting race. Outside of it, I won't be going back to it too often.
Can I just say how strange this is? So normally, if you're watching F1 or if you're listening to F1, you're hearing your voices. But now it's quite weird hearing your voices come out of your face.
And to have two commentators in the same place at once.
This never happens.
Never normally happen.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
But like, there's such a massive skill to commentary, but yet you both make it seem so easy. But it's not easy, right?
It's not easy. No, it's a role, but it's something that obviously suits us both. There are different jobs in so many different ways of life, aren't there?
Yeah. You
know? But it was a bit of a challenge this weekend, wasn't it, Harry? Because I know what it's like. I wasn't actually commentating this one; I was watching it. But when you've got a race like that, where there's really very little overtaking, everybody's one behind the other, it is a little bit of a strategy as a commentator to just keep throwing up different ideas, different thoughts to talk about.
I think that's exactly it. I always feel like your part of your job is to sell the potential of what could be happening, why somebody should stay listening, should stay watching for the next 10 laps, for the next 5 laps, because you don't know what's going to happen. Nobody does. That's why inherently we love watching Formula One, because ultimately we don't know what's going to happen. Mm. Something could happen or something might not happen, and you just have to take the cards where they fall. So that's sort of what you sell yourself as a commentator as well, to stay engaged and interested. But it's also, it is your job. You're running on adrenaline. It's live sport at the end of the day. And I think I'm in this job because I'm passionate about it as well, and I enjoy watching what's going on. And I think when you dig deep, there are some great storylines. The Max Verstappen one, the two McLarens and the strategy and the driver dynamic there. What's going on? Where were Ferrari this weekend? Lewis was down in eighth for the majority of it. What happened there? I always love a best of the rest fight and the rookies. I have no problems with talking about the battle for 14th place. If that's the thing that's exciting, that's the thing that's going on. And even though in the grand scheme of things, that's not the thing that's going to make the headlines, but if that's what you're being given during a race like the Grand Prix, then you've got to go for it. You've got to follow where the stories are and tell people why they should be interested in this particular thing.
Is there a different kind of skill level with commentary for telly versus commentary for radio?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Ben will know as well. I think I started, I suppose, doing TV because I did the support categories, which is essentially the Porsche Super Cups of this world and the Formula 3s, which was all telly.
Yeah.
So say what you see. But then I got the radio opportunity, and very quickly that expanded into every weekend doing the radio F1. And you become ingrained in that because you're having to firstly describe the pitches, because you're going out to people who are in their cars listening, or who are unable to watch the TV, or whatever the scenario might be, listening while they're out on a run or whatever. So you've got to be able to really put them in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult because Formula One moves at such high speeds. So before you know it, the next thing is happening, and you've got to be able to get the right words out in the right amount of time to tell people what's going on, to bring them up to speed. And I think that is a real challenge. It's something I don't find easy. I don't find commentating particularly easy. I feel like I have to work quite hard at it. So that is inherently the difference. Radio, you constantly got to talk and describe. TV, you can let the images breathe. People are seeing it. They know what they're watching. So you don't always have to say what you're seeing, but you have to kind of describe why it's important what they're seeing, or bring in your pundit or your co-commentator to help expand on a point and things like that. So there are nuanced differences. Ultimately, you're commentating the same thing. So there's always going to be, well, you've got to tell the story of the race ultimately. But with radio, for instance, in a Japanese Grand Prix where it's a bit boring, you can go off on a tangent and you can get away with it, because you can suddenly go off for half a lap talking about, you know, how Sonoda's doing down in 13th or whatever it might be, even though the pictures that we're watching are focusing on the battle that's going on, or the lack of battle that's going on at the front. The TV commentators are going to have to focus on that, whereas we can actually bring up Sonoda and have a little bit of a chat about that, and that's the interesting bit.
So are your notes different? because I know you brought Ben always has his commentary notes and stuff with him, and I always find it so satisfying that this book, as every week on this show, the book is just getting bigger and bigger
and bigger.
I love it. So I love that you've brought yours as well. Yours doesn't seem as neat as Ben.
Yeah, but it's probably a bit more current with everything that's going on at the moment, and it is important, isn't it, just to have references. You know, it's an important part of commentating, but you sometimes need to scroll through things quite quick to just pick back up a particular aspect that's turned up.
That's the thing, you've got to remember everything. As a commentator, the pressure comes from, you've got to be the authority on the sport, and you've got to know everything that's happened up to this point and the reasons for it. I mean, this one, this has got a fair bit. This is actually some of last year's
that's
as well.
A lot of things.
But a lot of this is just actually some, I've bullet pointed the regulations. I've gone through the big FIA regulations document and I've just bullet pointed the things, because I can't memorize all of the technical regulations, but I've got to know them. So I have, in case I need them within a race and I've gone blank or something, I can quickly find and remind myself within this easy folder. And I've bullet pointed them all by, well, I've typed them out, but I've gone through it myself. So sort of by hand.
Well, there's a bit of colour categories going on over here.
Yeah, there are no colour categories here.
You do get used to where your stuff is. I mean, I did set this up originally, but you know when you've set it up, you know exactly what you're doing and you go for it. So it's not too difficult.
Okay, fair enough.
I've got a bit of colour here. You know, these are my sort of, I don't know if that can be seen or not, but this is all sort of team notes. So I have on here every single important member of the team and what they do. So I know, you know, I've got, if I just pick out at random, if we go to Haas and the trackside operations manager is Neil Hoodley or Neil Hanley. So, you know, I've got that.
Quick, get to Haas now, go. I want to see your notes.
But I only have, you know, out of this whole big pack, you know, only sort of four or five kind of pages in front of me. And some of that stays the same every week. It's just kind of the driver's CV, in case I just need to remind myself what Fernando Alonso was doing in 1999. Oh, he was doing the European Open Nissan Championship and he won that one. So, you know, just in case I need that in a Alonso debate or whatever.
Yes, absolutely. We can get to that in a moment, maybe. But what was your origins of motorsport? Where did you get that love of motorsport, the passion you were talking about?
Honestly, just from watching it. I there's no motorsport in the family, no broadcasting in the family, nothing. Actually, my dad is a retired brain surgeon who his boss at one point was Sid Watkin. So that's the only loose connection I have.
He was a tremendous man.
And I think at one point my dad had the opportunity to go out and work with Sid, but my dad wasn't interested in Formula One, so I didn't want to travel. So what could have been? But I think it was maybe I was around 12 or 14, and I've got three older brothers, and we're all in the lounge, and they were watching the football, and I was sort of not really a big interest in what was going on. And then the football ended and then the Formula One came on, and I suddenly just was watching these cars go around and got really interested. And I think it was something really mundane, like the Chinese Grand Prix in 2011 or something. But I just remember watching it, and I think it was a battle, Adrian Suter had just overtaken somebody. And even though it was for like eighth place or something, but I just became fascinated by that midfield battle and how important it was for that team and that driver. And then that got me hooked into watching Formula One every weekend, and I'd watch it. And then I just had this urge to want to be involved more somehow. And I started a little blog when I was at school, just writing. And that was kind of it to begin with. Then I went off to drama school, and then I actually did university and got involved in student radio. And I kind of went away from motorsport for a bit, to be honest. And I got involved in like commercial radio and places like Heart. And I ended up on a station called Hits Radio for a bit while I was still at the university. Then COVID happened and I still loved motorsport, still watching it, but I wasn't actively involved anymore. And I started a podcast in COVID interviewing these big name drivers because no one had anything to do anymore. So you could get them the David Coulthards and we had Mario Andretti and all these people just dialing in on Zoom, and we'd interview them about their life, and that kind of progressed. And then eventually I got a meeting just from sending off loads of emails to Formula One management. And they had a meeting with me over Zoom, and they said, well, can you commentate? And I went, yeah, sure. Having never commentated before in my life. So this was 2020. And then a few months later, they invited me into Biggin Hill, which is where they're based. And it was actually the weekend, the Bahrain weekend, where Romain Grosjean had that huge crash.
Oh, yeah.
So I watched it live from the gallery. So we had every single angle of it available. And I've never seen it. The amount of people stood up in silence when that happened. It was amazing to kind of witness in a way the reaction to the broadcast gallery at the time for that. So that was my first experience of being in the Formula One kind of world. And then about 6 months later, they asked me to do Porsche Super Cup. And that was my kind of first proper commentary, Monaco 2021.
How'd it go?
I think it was all right. There was a red flag. So Porsche races are about 30 minutes long. Mm. And there was a red flag. They were heading up to the casino, big crash, blocked the track. Red flag for half an hour.
Oh, that was a challenge.
And I really thought they'd just cancel the race, but they did 30 minutes of nothing. And then they restarted the race for another 25 minutes. So, and Monaco, there wasn't exactly a huge amount of overtaking anyway. So that was my first experience of proper motorsport commentary. And I thought if I could get through that, then I could probably do anything. So,
well, because now, I mean, I was listening to you on Saturday morning on Five Live. I was listening to Quali, and there were a couple of red flag situations because of the grass fires that kept happening over and over again. So now whenever there's a red flag, do you feel pretty confident that you can just fill the time?
Yeah, I mean, I do specific prep for red flags. Like I think you always say, you know, 90% of your preparation, you're actually probably not going to use.
Yeah.
But it's in those moments. It's in the red flag moments. It's in the prolonged safety cars. It's if in the event of something ridiculous happens and we can't go out. I think we've been in Canada in the last couple of years, and all the CCTV cameras failed, and so no one went out on track. And you're thinking, oh, well, there's actually nothing wrong with the circuit or the cars. It's a technical failure around the circuit, but you're still on air.
Yeah.
So you still have to deliver a product. So that's when I actually kind of relish those moments now, because I quite like being able to go off on tangents and talk about things, especially if it's during a practice session.
Yeah.
I always look at practice as a bit of a podcast with some F1 cars going on in the background. And every now and then you're giving the updates as to what's happening, you know. So,
well, because I mean, because you were updating on the grass fires, but you were also updating on Isaac Hadjar's crutch situation.
Yes, that was a unique situation to be in. Yeah.
Did you see Quali?
I did see Quali, and I did feel for him afterwards. He was definitely struggling a bit, wasn't
he? His seatbelt was a tad.
I think second to Max Verstappen in terms of heroics this weekend for Isaac Hadjar.
Yeah.
But clearly a unique position to be in. But hey, he got his first points in Formula One. And he's actually been really spectacular. If you just forget about that incident in Australia, he's done rather well.
Yeah, he's a good boy.
Do you think this 2025 season is going to be the best one so far for you, commentating F1?
I've been saying that all throughout the build-up to the season. And every time I've said it off air, we then go, oh, I hope it is the best one.
We've got three for Sky.
Yeah, I'm doing three for Sky again. Yeah, so I'm hoping they'll be good.
Yeah.
You've had three different wins so far.
I think it could be. Look, there's one point in the championship. Yeah. And I thought Fernando Alonso said something really interesting reflecting on Verstappen's race. It reminded him of 2012, where Fernando Alonso didn't have the fastest car, third or fourth fastest car at times in the Ferrari. And he took that championship all the way to the end in Brazil. And that 2012 season is actually a standout for me. I remember it like it was yesterday for some reason. And I just remember Alonso standing in Sao Paulo with the rain coming down. He'd lost the championship and he's just staring into air and Parc Fermé with his lid up and you could see his eyes. He just lost the championship, but he didn't have the fastest car.
Yeah.
But he kept himself in it because he's Fernando Alonso. And he related to that to what Max Verstappen is doing now. Verstappen is not in a car that should be competing for the championship, but he will keep himself in the championship hunt. And we need that because otherwise I think the McLaren boys are in danger of running away with it a little bit.
Looking back on Japanese Grand Prix very quickly, can I ask you both a question? Would you rather give 20,000 euros to the FIA or poop yourself in front of millions of people?
You know, we asked this same question on the BBC's coverage.
We're talking about Carlos Sainz here.
Yeah.
So he missed a little bit of the national anthem because he was basically in the loo and the doctor even said, yeah, he's got a bit of a dicky tummy. It's actually a medical issue that he's got. He's not feeling too great. But they fined him anyway. So they fined him 10,000 euros and they said, and if he does it again, it's another 10,000. But it's on the form. It says 20,000 in total if he does it again. But it's a whole medical issue. They've said, yeah, he's clearly not well, but yeah, he's still got a fine.
Rules are rules, Nicola. Rules are rules. If you're not there for the national anthem in time, sorry, cough up.
No one wants to stand there during the national anthem and have a dicky tummy.
No, but he still raced, didn't he? So the FIA will come back and argue, it clearly wasn't too incapacitating for you.
No, but he was fine because clearly he emptied before he got in the car.
This wasn't the analysis I thought we would be doing when I was sold. Come on the Midweek F1 show.
I don't know how to say it.
Now, the one we want to be talking about, we need to talk about, this is always a part of our podcast, is the drivers that are going through a particular level. And you were talking about him just briefly a moment ago on a slightly different subject, Fernando Alonso, because he's got such heritage, such an amazing, two world champion ships and so many wins, but it has been a long time since he's won a race. It's some 200 Grand Prix now.
So over half his career.
That's right, because he's over 400 in terms of the number of Grand Prix he's done. So it's been a long, long time. And he's had a tough start to the year. What are your thoughts on Fernando? Do you think he still owes that position with Aston Martin?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I think up until this weekend, just gone, he wasn't even classified in the championship because he hasn't reached the checkered flag. And I was looking back through his career, and if he had continued to retire, it would have been his worst start to a season since, I think, his first ever year in Formula One, or maybe tied with some of those Baron McLaren years as well. I think, I think Aston Martin clearly haven't quite got the car yet. I mean, Stroll's managed to get 10 points from the first two races, but then you look at what Stroll did this weekend, he was at the back, and arguably Stroll benefited quite a lot from the mixed conditions and the crashes in Australia and the disqualifications in China. So,
and reliability, because Fernando was unlucky with reliability, wasn't he?
He was. He had a brake problem in China, but he did crash out by himself in Australia. So even the mighty Fernando Alonso is not immune of mistakes. I think he's always, he's a hell of a character, is Fernando Alonso. And you will never take away the talent he has. But there will be questions asked of if he has still got it. Oldest driver on the grid now. He is hanging on there for Adrian Newey and his influence on what that car's going to deliver. Could it be a massive turnaround the next year and suddenly Alonso's in the championship hunt? Could well be. I'm not convinced yet, but you think with a team that has all the money, all the financing going for them, with the services of Adrian Newey now, you have to think with a driver like Fernando Alonso Carr, he should be able to deliver not only for next year, but delivering now as well. And had an all right run in China, no points though. I don't think we can say Fernando is done. He's passed his sell-by date yet. I don't think we can say that at all. But I think he'll need to see an upturn in results this year in order just to keep that motivation. Because how many times has he made the wrong career move and it's just not worked out for him?
Yeah, I do tend to agree that being slightly further on in his life than some of the youngsters, I think in some ways he needs a good car around him to fire him back up again to his very highest levels. He's still doing a good job. And I think he's still, he's out qualifying Lance regularly. Not a lot in the first couple of races, a bit more in this in Japan. He's still very talented. But I do think that extra buzz that he would get from a good car, which we saw a couple of years ago when he was really getting some great results, he kind of needs that now, because when you've won a lot of races in the past and you've taken titles, you kind of want to be in that role again. It's a bit like Lewis, you know, Lewis Hamilton, when he's in a car and he knows he's there, he will deliver right to the very top again. When you're younger, I think sometimes you keep pushing yourself when everything's still not working because you're still trying to prove yourself. But I do think that Alonso in the right car could still deliver wonderfully. And next year will be interesting with Honda power as well, with Aston Martin. And they're, as you say, they've done so much work. I think they just haven't made it work for this year, but it could possibly be very strong next year.
No, and even though it's sort of been said that Adrian Newey hasn't had an influence on this car, he'll, of course, be having a one eye on it. And if he can find an improvement, you'll be sure as hell he'll make it. Hearing Fernando Alonso speak this weekend, his admiration for Max Verstappen on his pole lap and what he's able to do, I almost kind of felt like I saw a team manager sort of emerging from Fernando Alonso's tone. I could suddenly sort of see him being a quite a decent team boss. And I wonder if that maybe is something he's starting to transition to, and maybe if, you know, he vacates Aston Martin at the end of his contract and Max Verstappen.
It's true, actually. I mean, he manages drivers too, doesn't he? And he also encourages youngsters through karting, which is lovely to know that he really does boost drivers, but he does manage drivers too. So you're right. Maybe he's going to go down that kind of route.
Yeah, I don't know. I can see it. He manages Gabriel Bortoleto, who's on the grid, which is a sort of really bizarre dynamic to have all of a sudden. So I don't know. I think maybe there's all this talk about, well, if Red Bull continues to not deliver, could Verstappen leave? Rumour from the Verstappen camp says no, he's happy there, but it's Formula One. So you want a competitive car at the end of the day. You want to challenge for championships. And I wonder with the Honda move to Aston Martin, Adrian Newey, all the money, when Alonso calls time, does he transition into more of a managerial role there, and Alonso comes in, and Verstappen comes in, sorry, as the driver? I don't know. Could be quite a nice story.
That's quite an interesting prediction, that.
You can have that one for free.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We need to look ahead to next weekend, because we are off to Bahrain. Are you going in person?
No.
Okay. thoughts ahead of Bahrain, because obviously we've now had three different winners. We've had three different people on the top of the podium. What are your thoughts ahead of this coming weekend?
I think it's going to be better than Suzuka. I think there's more overtaking opportunities.
Anything can be.
It's a night race. It always looks a bit more spectacular. It's a track every single driver knows well, including the rookies. Pre-season testing there. Formula 2 has been there over the last few years as well. So everybody should know it like the inside of their hand. So the inside of their hand?
Back of their hand.
If you know the inside of your hand, that's pretty good going. Like the back of your hand. I've used all my good commentary for the weekend.
You clearly have, yes.
I just think that it will give us a more spectacle of a race. Could play into the hands of the Mercedes drivers as well. Lower temperatures maybe, helping them. Traditionally, that's gone well. Ferrari, as you were saying earlier, Ben, they've got good history there. So I think actually we're in more of a better fight. And I actually think we'll see a step from the likes of Yuki Tsunoda and the Red Bull as well. I came away from Suzuka thinking actually that wasn't bad from Tsunoda.
Yes.
And I think Red Bull have seen that result and immediately they've been vindicated by making that swap, in my opinion.
Agree. Yes.
And I think the fact it's a triple header, now two more left, that will only benefit somebody like him to get all the laps in that car, because of course he hasn't had any testing or anything in that team, so that will only benefit him. So I think that will see Red Bull improve along with what Verstappen's able to achieve.
Yeah, and Red Bull have got a good history here in recent years in Bahrain. One of the interesting things, I was looking back, McLaren have never won at Bahrain, even though they're supported by a Bahrain financial company that is in control of the McLaren group. So it would be huge. And yet we know they've got in many ways the best car. They're in that battle for the Drivers' Championship. So can they get their first win in Bahrain this weekend? It's possible.
Do you remember 2014, the first year of the hybrid engines, and Mercedes obviously emerged to the forefront, and we had this fantastic battle between Hamilton and Rosberg.
Yes.
Wheel to wheel, corner after corner, lap after lap. I'm thinking we might get something similar this weekend, maybe with the two McLaren drivers, throw Verstappen in there as well. I think we could be really treated, because this is a track where you do have got that long straight into a heavy braking zone. You've got that amazing turn, sort of double left-hander turn 9-10 onto another DRS when it's a really tight left-hander. If you can nip down the inside there, that'll be a nice tasty move. I think Alonso pulled off some quite good moves there in the last couple of years. So this track naturally opens itself up to slightly better racing than what we've just seen.
I just can't see it happening between the two McLarens.
What, playing nice?
I just can't see it happen. I can't see them being allowed to properly race each other. It just doesn't seem to be something that they're allowing to happen. They're just kind of letting Lando do his thing and not letting Oscar get close to him or not letting him have a go. Whereas when it came to Mercedes, you know, 11 years ago, they were allowed to race and have a good go at each other.
Well, so in Japan, I don't think we heard publicly that McLaren said no to letting them race.
It just feels like that though, doesn't it?
If you look at it on McLaren's side, Norris wasn't able to get through, and it wasn't like Norris was massively slower than Piastri. I agree, I think they should have let Piastri through and had a go, but they're probably thinking the risk is we let Piastri through, he tries, and then what? And then he doesn't get through.
Yeah.
And then switch the positions again. I think that could have happened, but we saw that there was a huge lack of overtaking from the entire grid. So what mm-hmm. good would that have achieved in the long run? I think Andrea Stella, the team principal of that team, he does maybe edge on the side of caution on that front slightly, mm-hmm. especially in these early stages. They want the second and the thirds if they can't get the wins, because they are the reigning constructors champions now, and they want to repeat that success. What they don't want is like we saw in Australia, where they had a 1-2 on the cards and then a mistake and a spin into the grass with Piastri sees him only come away with a couple of points. It's races like that we're going to come back to in the last quarter of the season and go, is that where Piastri lost the chance to be in with the title fight here? Or maybe we come back to Japan and go, is that the chance where if McLaren had allowed Piastri through to race, could that have got him in the running a bit more? Or if Norris hadn't have made that mistake on the pit exit, could he have been closer to try and get the overtake done? All these kind of things where in the moment they may seem a bit boring, we'll come back to them and go, they are actually pivotal moments that define 2025.
Okay. Well, speaking of title fights, we have our own prediction championship of the universe.
I've heard of this, yes.
It's gone from world to universe now. It's okay. Kind of a big deal.
It's gone from world to universe. Okay, yes, that is big.
I don't know how to go bigger than that, but that's, you know. So here's how it works. You're going to predict first place, second place, third place, and fastest lap. I know there's no points in the actual race for fastest lap, but we're bringing it back because it's fun.
Okay.
So if you get first place right, you get 6 points. Second place, 4. Third place, 2. And then fastest lap, you get a point. Now, as it stands, Team Guest are currently in the win. In the win? Are currently winning.
Like the inside of your hand.
Like the inside of my hand, yeah. So currently Team Guest are winning, even though last week, I think there was no points, from Team Guest last week, because Louise Goodman just scored absolutely nothing. However...
Not Louise, no.
Last week... I've managed to score 6 points because I guessed Max would do pretty well.
That was a good guess.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So that all adds up to Team Guest in first place with 14 points. Then producer Jim with 12 points. But wait for it, because I've also got 12 points. So we're joint second at the moment. And then Ben's got 3.
Hang on, if you're joint, if we're doing this in full Formula One, we've got to do this on countback. So who's actually second and who's because one of you's got to be third. Really. There's no ties in Formula One.
Well, then.
So I'll that just... needs to be clarified. Come on, producer Jim.
I'm in second because I got there first.
Don't see
and I thought of the game.
There we go. That's all you need. That's all you need.
I make up the rules. Okay, so predictions. P1, P2, P3, fastest lap.
Okay, P1, Piastri.
Oh.
P2, Verstappen.
Okay.
P3, Norris. Fastest lap goes to Yuki Tsunoda.
Wow.
Oh.
There you go. Guess, isn't it?
Oh.
That's really good.
Ben?
Yeah. I'm just going to guess, but I'm actually going for Piastri for the win as well. See if McLaren do get their first win there. I'm going to go for Norris in second place.
Ooh.
See if it's a 1-2 for the McLaren team. And actually, I'm going to take a risk. Go for a Ferrari in third, even though Verstappen, I'm sure, will be up there somewhere. But let's go. I'm going to go for a Hamilton. He's got a good record here at Bahrain. Hamilton third. It seems unlikely, but I'm going to go for it. Fastest lap will be Max, in my view.
Pretty solid, pretty solid. I'm going to go... P1 Max, and that's not because I've got a contract with Red Bull.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. because he's very good on that track.
Biased,
he's obviously
he got you
now
lots of points last week.
He's on fighting form. He's feeling good about himself. I think he's going to go in next week pretty strong. I'm going to go P2 Oscar.
Okay.
Because I've been saying this every week. I think he's going to outdrive Lando. It's just annoying that they're not quite allowing him to go for it as much. But I think Oscar's going to get there. I'm going to go P3, curveball. Curveball P3. I'm going to go Lewis.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I just think even though the last couple of weeks for him haven't been that great, I feel like it's in him. Like I feel like he's getting a bit more hungry for it and a bit more feisty for it. And I think Lewis is just going to be up there. And I think there's going to be a mistake along the way with Mercedes somewhere. Okay.
We haven't mentioned Leclerc, and I think Leclerc will be quick there. He's a winner. He's been a winner in Bahrain before.
Yeah.
So I was really trying to decide which one of the two Ferraris should I put there, but I've gone for Hamilton because he's done well there in the past. But I do think Charles could be quick too. So.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Lewis, P3. Okay. Yeah.
Who's your fastest lap?
My fastest lap was, well, it's annoyed me that you've gone for him because I was going to go for him.
You can't copy.
Now I can't copy.
No.
Because I was going to say Yuki, but I'm not going to go Yuki now. I'm going to go for Lando.
Okay.
Yeah. Doing it. Jim.
I'm along the same lines. I'm going to go Norris because their pre-season testing pace was amazing and it was cold, cold, cold.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Oscar because I think team orders are already in play despite what we've discussed. And I'm going to go Verstappen because he has got his mojo back and has traditionally gone well there. And fastest lap, I'm going Kimi.
I was thinking back-to-back fastest laps.
Interesting. Oh, Yuki got driver of the day as well, by the way.
Yeah, but
just felt a bit weird.
Kimi got driver of the day in China and they didn't really have a race to write home.
According to Toto, it's just because he's handsome.
Well, appeals to a certain demographic for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Right, before we wrap up,
yes,
I want a little bonus story from you. Now, this was never part of the plan for this podcast, by the way. Basically, our first guest, Vicky Butler Henderson, came on. She had a random fact about owls. And then she started talking, and then it just became a thing. So now at the end of every episode, we have either an interesting fact or a little bonus story that you've got, please.
Okay, I'll give you a little bonus story. So I was in Japan a couple of years ago for the Grand Prix, so loosely related. My first time in Japan, and we had a night in Tokyo before we then were going to get the train to Nagoya, and that's where we'd stay to go to the track every day. But in Tokyo with the BBC 5 Live team, and Andrew Benson is the BBC's F1 correspondent, wanted us all to join him for a drink at the top of the Park Hyatt Hotel, which is a very famous rooftop bar where they filmed a scene from Lost in Translation, the movie.
I love that film.
And I'd never seen it, so I was getting an education. And it was very hot and humid in Tokyo, so shorts were the order of the day. And me and my producer, Paddy, who Ben will know, we went up to the top floor wearing our shorts. Not scruffy, just normal shorts.
Yeah.
There was a dress code to get into this bar. Shorts were not allowed. And so the maitre d' said, I'm afraid we can't let you in. Meanwhile, Andrew, Rosanna Tennant all went through. And so me and Paddy are left there at the entrance. Thankfully, they have had this problem before. So the maitre d' presents trousers for both of us.
Oh.
Now, of course, Japanese population tends to be rather smaller than certainly me, who is 6'5". So we get these trousers and Paddy and I go to the bathroom and put them on. Paddy's fine. He just about gets them on and he goes right in. I step in to put them on and I can pull them up to my knees.
Sure.
And that's as far as they're going. Everything else is on show. So I've got my boxers on and they're there on show. And I'm thinking, how am I going to go into this bar now? I have a little bag that I've put my shorts in. And luckily for me, the lighting is fairly dim and dark. And the maitre d' wasn't waiting for me to leave the loo. So I sort of pulled the trousers up as much as I could and then pulled my shirt down as much as that would go and then covered the remaining sort of holding a bag kind of here, saw where the others were sat, having cracked open the bathroom door, made a beeline for the table, no one looking, ran, sat down, and then no one's seen anything, and I'm sat there with a drink. But as I'm sat down, obviously, my trousers are pretty much just below the knee and my boxers are right here. So from the top up, it's all fine. But if anyone were to look underneath, they'd be in for a little bit of a shock. So that was my beginning of my Japanese tour.
Wait, so if you were savvy enough, you would have just left your shorts on. And then just pulled the other trousers up to there.
Good point.
And then you wouldn't have been sat in your boxes.
Good point. But that's not as fun, is it? So, but the bottom line was I wasn't allowed the shorts. So these were like formal black trousers and the shorts were sort of white.
So instead you went pants, bit of leg.
Bit of leg, yeah.
Trousers up to your knees.
Orange boxes.
Orange boxes.
Well. Yeah.
But then also you would have then maybe had a couple of drinks and then you had to leave.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah. So then I had to scurry along to the loo again and quickly change. I got away with it, I think. So you know, until someone dropped a fork under the table and then, you know, got. But we got away with it. Well, so done. It was fine. Yeah. And that was my first sort of introduction to Japan, really. Night one. And it really set the tone for the rest of the weekend, nice. Which was an absolute disaster of a weekend. But that's too long a story to tell now. So that's my little lost in translation.
That story might be my favourite story.
Good
so
story.
Far.
Yeah, good story. Yeah,
the like favourite one so far?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. The bar's been set low, though, to be fair.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, good fun.
This has been nice. Don't forget to subscribe. So wherever you're listening to your podcast, you can click follow. Or if you're watching on YouTube, then you can subscribe to our channel and let us know your predictions ahead of next week's race. Did we have predictions?
No
I feel
one
like
got
we
it
should
right.
do a shout out.
Yeah, we did. No one got it right on YouTube.
No one got it right. Oh, no one got it right on Shocking. YouTube. So no pressure. See if you can get it right. Let us know in the comments section below. And if you do get it right, you'll get a shout out on next week's show. How's that? Lovely stuff. And we'll see you next week. Thank you.